There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast.
On the left.
Right from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Magic of sausage is that, and I know there's a lot of people that say, I guess the term would be you don't want to see, quote unquote, how the sausage is made.
That's right, because it's disgusting.
No.
Yes.
It's interesting, and it's food science. And what I like is what you see with a sausage, right? Whatever the base meat is, you add in the spices, you grind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Of course.
You add in cubes of fat, you grind it.
Yeah, you got
to. And when
to.
That does, so you can take a meat that is not necessarily the most luscious of meat, but you add a layer of fat with the actual packaging of the sausage, therefore making the meat itself more juicy.
Mm. All right. Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everyone. This is the Relaxed Fit episode live from Bristol, England. We are in Marcus's hotel room. Speaking of food, Henry is in love with sausage. He has just recommended when we go to Stockholm, Sweden, we eat a platter of different kinds of sausage from what seems to be endangered animals.
Will you go through a zoo?
Which is very interesting.
If you just could open your imagination and look at a zoo like a grocery store, you too can expand your palate to that of the Swedish.
No, this is why every zoo has a no Polish person policy. And of course, because we're in Marcus's room, we're also staring at what Marcus likes to consume, which is not meat related. But it certainly is dangerous in the sugar content. It is a iron brew. I'm looking at you have a hobgoblin.
That is not a hobgoblin. Hobnobs, you fucking idiot. Look.
Oh, hobnob. I'm sorry.
I got both the milk chalk and the regular kind. They're wonderful oat cookies.
Is that
or
a biscuit?
They're biscuits.
They're biscuits.
As they call them here.
I will only call it a biscuit here because I'm here.
You have to.
I know, because I've already been yelled at.
It's a biscuit. It's not a biscuit.
Yeah. I was at the casino yesterday. Speaking of
what?
It was speaking of what I did, and I made a massive mistake where I exchanged my money. I did okay until the end, and then you leave. So you want to do well at the end, but you know what? It doesn't matter. And I exchanged my money, and I said, "Oh wow, your guys' currency is so much nicer than ours." And then I made the mistake of making a joke in my head, and then I said out loud. And then I said, except for, of course, the queen's face on it. And then I said, man, I am sorry. I love her. And then they looked at me as if I just offended them greatly. And then I walked out of the casino.
Well, Ben, if you want to get back on their good side, just go and grab yourself a little bag of Monster Munch. Pickled onion flavor.
See, why though?
It is.
You guys all, I am so sick of the persecution I receive from this group. Because when I was originally, the opening of this, we had a very severe discussion and a disagreement about bear sausage. And again, listeners, send us mail and tell us how, like, I know bear is not the most common meat.
I don't think so at all.
I don't think so. Obviously not. I know it's not. But how often do you see it in a restaurant, especially here in Europe, right? Because it's like we see, like, when we
venison,
went to
perhaps.
We went to Australia and we ate kangaroo.
Not like venison. People don't eat predators. Predators don't taste good.
You're just making shit up. You never had it. So when you have
isn't every animal a predator? A deer is a predator to someone.
A deer is not a predator.
A
herbivore. You don't eat carnivores.
It's a predator.
Junior high biology.
That's
you are literally.
But
also,
this
has got nothing to do with biology, because they didn't talk about you don't need predators in biology. No one's ever said that.
I'm just going to say plants are alive. Have you guys not heard about this? Plants feel, and they eat plants.
Don't you do this.
They are still predators of nature.
Did Jenny from Forrest Gump just show up in this room?
Hey, man. She died.
She died. But no, we were just talking about how, like, you can mix it up. But that's what we were. We all have our own peccadilloes here.
True.
Right? Obviously.
But I no am one concerned. Dies when he eats his pickled onions.
Nope, not I at am, all. And no I one am, dies when I eat
Marcus.
My wonderful Kosten Press elderflower lemonade soda.
That's what he likes. I'm
normally,
just concerned.
I think that elderflower is an overpowering flavor, but this, I think it's absolutely scrummy.
As soon as you put it, just a tiny little, Paul Hollywood, I wish you'd put your mushroom tip aside my briar pitch.
I love, you sound like Julia Childs if she has never shat.
That's Mary Berry.
That's Mary Berry. But apparently they don't like each other. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation about the Great British Bake Off.
Which is, this show's not about, technically.
It's not, we could.
We can do whatever we want. This is a relaxed fit. Take that belts off.
Oh, my belt is off. Wait, yeah, it is off.
Oh, but we do have an actual good story today, but we'll get to that.
Oh, we will. I looked up, because we're in Bristol. Number one, just Marcus, I just want you to watch your kidneys, all right, okay. Because you got to watch your sugar intake.
Good call.
But I know that Bristol is the famed home of Blackbeard, the dread pirate.
Oh.
I believe is Edward Teach.
Was he the first one to do Buttalingus? Remember that when that TV show Girls, everyone was like, they're so brave, they're doing Buttalingus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but his name would be Brownbeard.
Ah, yeah, it's very true.
Although
from the Guinness that I had in Ireland, I think he could still be black.
Well, that was the problem. I mixed Guinness with Pepto-Bismol.
Oh!
And I thought my shit looked like Voldemort's fucking cubes.
Oh, yeah. I had the spiciest curry of my life last night, and my shoulders started sweating.
This is great.
I made sure I had some Gaviscon double action, had a few of those, man. The shit was bad, but the heartburn was all gone.
There it is.
Your table looks like Prince Albert's fucking rider. It is just all of this shit, all of that weird. You know that weird energy drink with the bits in it?
Lucozade.
What the hell is? What are the bits?
It's powered by glucose.
That's just sugar.
That's just sugar. That is just sugar.
But it gives you energy.
You're gonna fall asleep on stage tonight.
Hey, you go out and drink your 15 beers. I have my Lucozade.
I know. Which is better or worse?
That's the beer is worse.
I actually don't think that's true.
I don't think it's true.
I think it is at least beer is powered by creativity, not glucose.
It's got oats in it.
But
I try to look up the history of black beer because I wanted to know more about it because that was one of those topics that we've bendied about wanting to do on the show. We wanted to do more pirate lore because we think it's fun. And Bristol's like a pirate town, right?
Yeah.
They have little pirate bars, which I'm certain like you would endlessly roast us for going inside.
I went into one yesterday.
You did?
That's where I had my fish and chips. It was very pirate themed, very nautical themed.
Was it that boat restaurant?
No, not the boat restaurant, but it was near the water. It was very nice.
Good.
Yes.
But Bristol has, like, obviously, it's a history of blood and slave trade. It's an interesting city as you look at a bit of its history. A bit dark.
Yeah.
But all of the stuff I was reading about Blackbeard is all just the fact that all the stories are not true.
Yeah.
What? I thought Blackbeard, he's not a real person.
But he's a real person.
Is he an amalgamation?
There's a lot of, I guess, storytelling when it comes to him. A lot of exaggeration.
A
man who fishes for a living would tell a lie?
No.
Pirates don't fish.
They don't fish?
No.
Why not?
They plunder.
They don't eat fish.
You're telling me a pirate doesn't eat a fish?
I'm saying they don't fish themselves. The whole point of being a pirate is so you don't have to fish.
So you're just going to go into a village and steal everyone's fish?
Yeah. Being a pirate.
Guys, so pirates are technically at the time, they were actually more accepted than they are now. They actually would use them all the time as reserves for the navies. So it's all of this stuff where you find out that they actually allowed a lot of this shit to happen. Essentially, it would become a side economy, and that actually Blackbeard was closer to a sea businessman than a pirate. And
well,
yes,
that's
he
exciting.
Did. No, and that's a problem. But yes, he did light like firecrackers under his hat to make himself look more scary.
Okay.
He wore his beard really long, and the idea is that he understood back then that the legend is more important than the fact, and so he would build up his own legend in order to use his own reputation's leverage. So then when he'd show up in his big old ship with all the kind of shit, people would expect this guy that would fucking kill you and your fucking mother, and he had sex with little babies. And then you find out that, like, none of that's... He was actually a very good negotiator and all of this shit.
So the story is actually better.
No, it's worse because it's better.
You see, I think that's actually better that he didn't do all of those horrific things like
he was the lead singer
of a metal band that's now in prison.
No, but it's not as fun. It's not as fun because you want the story to be horrifying. It's like when we did the Donner Party.
Yeah.
The best part about the Donner Party was that you realized that the story was so much more metal once you went past the...
Yeah.
The story of the Donner Party.
Like, all of the A&E right. biographies are super boring and super dry where you actually can get into it. So that's why I was like, I was going to talk more about it. And I was like, oh.
Turns out he's just a good guy.
No, he's not a good guy.
He's an average guy.
He was a man of his time.
Interesting. He sounds like the fifth member of Pantera, the way he dresses.
Yeah. That's what was cool.
Pantera is a big time cowboy influence band or pirate influence band.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, dude. No, he was very fashionable. That was kind of his thing. Well, he wore buckles. All black.
That's the thing with cowboys and pirates. No one gives them enough credit for being so fashion forward.
Pirates have more buckles than cowboys, though.
You
cowboys
think so?
Cowboys just got the one, the belt buckle. Pirates have like six or seven.
I've seen some boot buckles on those cowboys. They'll put a boot buckle on there.
Pirates have more things to buckle to themselves.
That's true.
They have more tools.
That's true.
Because that was so that they had one cool thing that he did have. He was famous for having this sort of like a quiver of guns where he had this strap on that would have three guns just on the back of it, which is fucking dope because sounds it took like, a long time to reload them. So yeah. You needed more guns.
Yeah, he sounds like Cable. That's a pretty cool superhero right there.
Yeah.
There needs to be a pirate superhero. Is there anyone pirate influenced?
Ooh, I mean, technically Nightcrawler, he had a pirate.
Is he a pirate?
Nightcrawler had a pirate face.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, I guess technically it's fucking, what's his name? Johnny Depp.
Oh, Pirates of the Caribbean, but he's not a superhero. He's just like a pedophile or something. I have no idea what
was his name?
I've never seen one of those movies, but they're everywhere.
What was his name, Ned?
Jack Sparrow.
That's right. I thought it was, for some reason it was like Johnny Rockets,
like something like
food
that.
Place. No, they made that much more cartoony version. But if you do walk around Bristol, it does feel a little Pirates of the Caribbean-y. But if I do say that, I feel like to a person on the street in Bristol, I'll get punched in the face.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I had my little Bristol experience. You know what I did this weekend?
What's
you know what I did this week rather? I conquered my fear of heights. Oh. I went on a carousel and I sat there alone. And the man who put me on the carousel, you know what the cultural similarities?
Uh-huh.
People who work in amusement parks, no teeth. Everywhere you go,
a carny is a carny.
And I got on and I was like, I'm real scared of heights. Is this gonna break? Made a little height and weight joke about myself, mm-hmm. but that was really just to be like, make sure it doesn't fall. And then as soon as I got on, he spun me around a whole bunch. And he was laughing. And I was like, okay. And then I went up around and I had a great view of the city. And it was scary, but it wasn't that horrifying.
Oh, it's beautiful.
So there you go. Conquer a fear this week. That's what I say. Unless, of course, your fear is doing something like a mass shooting, in which case, don't conquer that fear.
Yeah, why are you afraid of that, of doing it? That's a scary,
but if
complicated
have, if you
issue.
Have a healthy fear, conquer that this week. Hmm. And do something that surprises even you.
See, I try to do it. I went to go try to find a succulent UK meal.
You are doing
that I
okay.
Could find a because he started.
You
reviewing.
Are Henry is on the road. We are every time we come to Europe. Mm-hmm. You always find the hipster place.
I try to find something cool to eat at.
Again, it just means the chef is gay.
I know.
That is the only thing it means. And they're like, this is the coolest place in town. But you can't trust the food. Just go with the basics. I'm fish and chips. I had a great dinner last night.
I needed a break. I needed a break from the purely fried food. I needed a break. My whole body was like vegetables, something that you can recognize, something not brown. And so I went and I was like, you know what I kind of want? I kind of want a classy steak with vegetables and a salad, do a thing. And it's still weird. It still tasted weird. They did something to it and made it weird.
We went to that hipster place in Australia as well. They served the kangaroo cold. I don't know why they do any of these things.
Black and blue.
Come on.
I just can't wait until later on today after I go to Arnos Vale Cemetery after we record. I'm going to go have a shepherd's pie, which I've been dreaming about for days now.
Honestly, but that's where you'll crush it. You're going to get it good. I also was looking at they have that play that Pie Meisters place. That
yeah,
has
that's
all
where
the,
I'm going to go. That's supposed to be one of the best pie shops in all of Bristol.
But there's like three of them.
You can do it. You know what I really want to try is jellied eel.
Ooh, I could try jellied eel.
It's exactly as advertised.
Jellied eel?
Jellied eel.
Jellied eel.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, why do you want to try that?
Because it's something new.
Yeah, I'll totally try all that. Because England is where I'll try all the weird foods because England is my ancestral land.
You're very, as soon as we land in Europe, you are 99.8%?
99.8% English, yes.
And then as soon as we landed in Bristol, Marcus looks at me, he's like, I smell the air. I feel like I belong here.
It felt right. It just felt like, yes.
Yes.
This is where my people are from.
You with all the other tombstone people. It's the same pallor. But no, I understand. But my problem is having a pie in the middle of the day is difficult.
No, it's fine. As long as there's no like sugar in it. As long as it's just like thick
pastry pie.
It'll be good.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Fucking belly, man. But jellied eel, honestly, though, there's no difference between a jellied eel and a bear sausage in terms of what are we eating here. But in terms of Loch Ness Monster, have you read this? They have now...
Oh, absolutely. No, the eel has a long history of culinary uses here. Yeah, like it was a poor person's food back in the day because the River Thames used to be full of eels. and that's what all the poor people would eat.
Interesting.
And then eventually they flipped it and reversed it and made eel a delicacy. They made it something where all the rich people could eat it once they saw how good all the poor people were having.
I can guarantee it's the same thing about bear sausage. It's literally the same exact thing.
No, it's not. No one eats bear.
You literally have no clue what you're talking about.
Someone eats bear. Apparently Henry is a place where they make them into sausages.
I mean, I'll eat it. But apparently Loch Ness Monster, what they just did was this huge research exhibition into these people wanted to really talk about let's nail down all the possible things a Loch Ness Monster could be. So they did this sort of, I guess they could take the water from the loch and they could do a DNA sampling.
It's called eDNA, environmental DNA. So they could see everything that's in the environment.
Yeah, but they didn't see any giant ancient creature DNA or whatever. They still don't know how to identify that. But the newest, latest theory of what the Loch Ness Monster could have been is a theoretical giant eel.
Well, I think that that still makes it the Loch Ness Monster then.
Yeah,
I think so.
It doesn't have to be. That's a cryptid in my books. Well, a giant ass eel. If you saw that shit when you were fucking fishing with your boy. Oh my God.
Well, the locals are not impressed with this at all. Like the local Loch Ness Monster expert says, any 12-year-old boy knows that there are eels in Loch Ness. Everyone knows there are eels there. This isn't a big eel. The fuck?
I love cocky, boutique Loch Ness Monsters, trinket salesmen yelling at scientists.
I know what's happening in Loch.
But you know what it is, honestly, is they don't want their money fucked with.
No, they don't. Of course not.
Of course.
Because if you straight up and finally say that there's a reason and a what of what the Loch Ness Monster is, that ruins the mystery.
But I actually don't think that would. It obviously is a once in a lifetime sized deal.
Yeah, but
so that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, but I'm not traveling from America to Loch Ness to see a big eel.
You know what, though? Mm-hmm. If I was there already, I'd go look at a big old eel.
Yeah, of course, check it out. You,
if there was a chance to see a big eel, I'd take an afternoon.
Absolutely. So in the end, they still have the rubes.
Yeah.
They still have us, all the cryptid boys, who are excited to go see it.
Yeah, but then eels are just the tapeworms of the sea.
Is that true?
I don't know.
I actually don't know either.
Not sure.
I think they're snakes. But didn't Aleister Crowley have a house on the Loch Ness as well?
Yes, he did.
Who did?
Aleister Crowley.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Yeah. So I would check that out in a fucking second.
Think where he did his most famous rituals, the big, big, evil rituals he did on Loch Ness.
When he was doing that
house that Robert Plant later bought.
He was doing that one ritual with that huge eel that he pumped full of steroids, and he dropped it in Loch Ness. Aleister Crowley.
Was it up his asshole?
It was up his butthole. That's why they're the tapeworms of the sea.
Look and see my works. See what I can do.
As the tail just slapping against his thighs.
Yes, yes, deeper.
Well, speaking of traveling around, Marcus, you have got some research that you did on some of the locations we've been. I believe that this story crosses over both Ireland. I don't know what that is.
Ireland?
Ireland?
You said it like my grandfather.
Ireland?
Ireland?
Yeah, everyone wears feet. Everyone wears shoes on their hands and gloves on their feet. It also talks about Europe and some grave robbing.
Oh, yeah. Today, we'll be talking about famed 19th century Irish grave robbing serial killers, Burke and Hare.
This shit was awesome. Marcus and I had a really great tourist day going through Dublin.
Yeah.
And so we went to Christchurch for some reason. Then I found out that's Protestant. We've had a lot of bleak stuff about Ireland this trip. This trip was fucking... Whew, they have got some stories.
They got a bloody history.
However, although they were Irish serial killers, their crimes were actually committed in Edinburgh, Scotland.
But the inspiration for the story came from Marcus and I went on a ghost tour of Dublin, which was...
And you were told to plug the guy.
I am not going to.
You're not going to.
It was fine.
Okay.
It was fine until we discovered that they just took us on the ghost tour was just, a three-block circle?
Yes, around our hotel room. And then we found out that, so all of these locations, I already knew. I didn't realize I knew them until all of a sudden, we after the bus tour, and I was walking around Dublin being like, oh, I've just been looking at this shit for the last, like, 3 days.
Yeah,
this has all just been right around the apartment. I've been going to that coffee shop. Yeah. Like, literally right there.
Yeah. It's kind of the ghost tour your mom goes on.
Okay.
Yes. But otherwise, the one cool part was that they took us to a cemetery where he started talking about the idea of professional grave robbing, which I thought was absolutely fucking fascinating.
And, of course, synchronicity, covering Mormonism and Joseph Smith.
Of course. And this story came from a book that a fan actually gave us in Dublin called Murder, Mutiny, and Mayhem, by Joe O'Shea.
Cool. Sounds good to me, Marcus.
I love it.
Well, Burke and Hare were not sexually motivated serial killers. They were in it completely for the profit, although the profit did not come from the victims themselves. What Burke and Hare were selling was the victims' bodies.
Cool.
Over a relatively short period of time, Burke and Hare murdered at least 16, but up to 30 people, and sold their sometimes still warm bodies to Professor Robert Knox, who was a quote-unquote medical doctor who paid a hefty sum for fresh cadavers.
You know when he got these bodies and he feels it. It's like when you get like a fresh loaf of bread from the store and you're like, oh, still warm from the oven. And as he's like going like little kisses, like, ah, this is nice. It's still pink. I can kiss it and pretend it's alive.
Yeah, what did this guy do with all those bodies? Was he a doctor?
He was a doctor.
He was. Okay.
He ran a little medical school and the bodies were still warm. Actually, it was his students that would comment on it, where they would touch the body and they're like, bodies aren't supposed to be this fresh.
No, it's better this way. You'll see, my little one. See how I can squeal? Oh, still nice and juicy.
No, unfortunately, this was sort of the natural progression for a business that had been thriving for decades. Burke and Hare were what were known as resurrection men, which was slang for guys who dug up fresh corpses and sold them to medical schools. Because back in the early 19th century, it was difficult for medical schools to get a hold of cadavers for medical students to dissect, especially in the UK, after they stopped using recently hanged criminals for studious evisceration, as a matter of course.
So cool.
All right.
But you know,
a tough day at school. Tough Monday to be hung over at school.
Yeah.
Because
I remember when we did our first fetal pig dissection, and that was a little rough for me in the beginning because I wasn't as quite as a culinary advanced man as I am today.
Yeah, you weren't licking it. That's good.
But I do think there's something very suspicious about a boutique medical school. I'm not looking for the indie hipster medical school.
I don't even trust Tom Savini's medical school, and all the cadavers are fake. Or whatever school he does, Tom Savini. Special effects school.
Live from your grave. Live from your grave.
Well, regardless, the medical students still needed cadavers. So the resurrection men stepped in to fill the demand. Grave robbing became such a problem that the wealthy actually started taking measures to prevent this from happening. If you had money, it wasn't rare to cover a loved one's grave with a slab of granite or marble, or to encircle the burial place with high spiked rails, and a lot of graveyards had night watchmen that would shoot trespassers on sight.
Cool.
I would say just bury me face down, ass up, and when they try to dig it up, then you got a funny little joke, because then they got to look at my butt.
They just start having sex with it.
Well, honestly, I'm not one of those big corp. You're not one of those big corpse guys.
You're not a big corpse guy.
You can put that on record. That's on record now, public. But I don't understand the whole, like, when I'm dead, I want to be cremated, all that. I really don't care.
Yeah.
David Cross actually used to do a funny bit about that.
Yeah, throw me in the trash. Who gives a
shit?
Yeah, use my body for science and see what happens. See how a genius's brains looks from the inside. And then they're just like cutting open my balls and saying out like, ugh, Polish cum is weird.
Well, what we discovered was that a lot of times these grave robbers, these resurrection men, they wouldn't actually dig into the grave themselves. They had armies of orphan children that they would pay to go down into the graves and like put a hook underneath the deceased person's chin, and then they'd pull them up.
It was really cool because on the tour, it was a bunch of all these people were like shaking their heads because the guy was like, he would use orphaned children to dig way down into the grave. And everyone's like, that's horrible. And both Marcus and I were like, I think that's great. My question is that when the kids were doing it, were they doing all the hard work because they send the kids in to bury and through? No one was asking questions.
It's like, yeah. It's like the cartoon The Rescuers.
Yes.
Yeah. Henry raised his hand, the guy definitely was like, I usually don't get questions on this part of the tour.
I don't understand why, though. It's the most fascinating part of the whole thing. The kids would tunnel down, and he said because they got hands small enough to really get in there, they can displace more dirt. They would hack open the top of the casket and get to the face. And then those kids, their jobs were to be to remove all the teeth and scoop out the eyeballs, because if they couldn't get up, because they would shove a hook in the chin bone, right, to lift it up. But sometimes it would snap the chin bone when they were trying to pull the corpse up through the hole of the casket. So then they would have to get whatever items they could get. So the kids would, like, literally pop out the eyeballs and all this shit. And we were laughing. And everyone was staring at me like I was a crazy person.
I mean, it's weird to say, but I think if I was an orphan in Ireland back in the day, it's probably kind of fun.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
What else are you going to do with your day?
Yeah, of course. You go in, you pop out eyeballs, you bring them up to Old Crow.
And you get praised for it.
Do you imagine Marcus as a boy? If his ancestral boyhood, and Marcus been like,
Marcus,
yes, I'll do it for free.
Marcus, we really love what you're doing. We really love what you're doing. Is there such a thing as, like, doing too good of a job? Because
I'll do it when you're alive.
Now, I know you guys are really big on the grave robbing business here, but I've got a couple of suggestions that I think we can really take this to the next level.
I like our new business partner. It's like Shark Tank.
Well, if you weren't one of the people in the British Isles that was rich enough for granite or iron gates or hired help, your family or friends were forced to stand guard over your grave for days until the body rotted enough where it was no longer useful to medical students.
Interesting.
Can you imagine depending upon Holden McNeely to watch your grave?
Hey, yeah, I had to leave. My switch ran out of battery. I wanted to go, but now I'm just fucking... I fell asleep. How long am I supposed to stay here? I've been here almost full 25 minutes.
I'll flip it and reverse it. Bring some brews. Have a good time with your friends, perhaps. Have a party, maybe.
That'd be a nice wake, actually. I think a graveside wake would be a lot more fun than, like, the stodgy funeral home wake.
That's absolutely a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. A nice outdoor, because we all love drinking outside.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. You get a trash can, put some wood in there, get a fire going.
That would be a lot of fun, just hanging out there, burning tires around the grave, fucking ripping bongs, making sure no one gets in there.
No one. Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah. And this was very necessary, because resurrection men would stay on the lookout for funeral processions and would fall in line behind the actual grieving families so they could follow them to a new harvesting opportunity.
That's so much fun.
Ooh, right.
And sometimes they wouldn't even have to do that, because resurrection men often worked with the grave diggers themselves, who would purposely make the grave much shallower than normal for ease of retrieval.
I don't think that's fair. I think you got to go the full 6 feet if you're going to get the body.
Nah,
you
buddy.
You want the prize, you got to work for it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's all about shortcuts, buddy. You got to find out, if this is your business, think about how we even do this show. We are now sitting here. We're doing a Relax Fix episode. I don't have a shirt on. You got your toes out, which is strange to see.
Yeah, yeah, they're kind of nasty.
No, but I'm fine. I don't show my feet because my feet are also little goblin feet. Yeah. I don't want anybody to see them. But we've tried to find a way to do this with as much as little, like, as we can. If you're grave robbing, you go for, like, you know, someone really skinny.
Marcus still just wrote an 8-page script, and this is the week that we asked him to take it off.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like we just dig our hole like 10 feet, and then this week we're like, we'll only do 7 feet this week.
No, I like it.
Yeah, he likes it.
I know. He sits here, consumes all the sugary and all the pickled eel potato chips.
No, pickled onions, sir. Walker's Monster Munch. Put your nose in.
Honestly, I want to smell it.
Oh, dude, it smells so good.
Oh,
I'll smell it.
Oh, dude.
I don't it like it.
How do you guys, not love that? That's like one of my favorite smells on earth.
It smells like how a cancer dog tells if you have cancer. So
bad. Oh my god, it just man. Smells like a constable's feet.
I got two bags because I knew I was going to want another one immediately.
These are Funyuns.
Yeah. No, but they're oh no, they're so much better than Funyuns. Funyuns are nothing compared to
Funyuns.
All right, let's get back to a less horrific story about grave robbing, please.
Set this away from me.
I can't wait until this episode's over so I can eat more of them.
You'll get it, buddy. Oh, my God.
We gotta keep them right next to me so I can sniff them when I want.
Travis, this is a note. We need to change these mic covers after this trip.
Well, what these people would do, they wouldn't even wait until the person was dead. Some gangs had a network of informants in lodging rooms, poorhouses, and back alleys in the major cities, and those informants would summon a resurrection man when it seemed like someone was close to death.
That's so fucking fun. That's so much fun. You just want...
why are you guys getting so close to me? Why are you guys surrounding me like this?
Here's more pickled onion monster munch. Oh, yeah? What's this gonna do? Like, we're in here for the long haul. We want a nice pickled body and see what it does to the kidneys.
Then, once the person died, the gang would sweep up the corpse and hustle it over to the medical school, where the doctor would pay him £10, which may not sound like a lot, but that was half of what an average laborer could make in a year.
What?
Damn.
Yeah.
How much is a sterling?
£10, like sterling silver, yeah.
So like $100?
No, pounds as in their...
Yeah, no, I'm asking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, £10, whatever, £10 is worth it.
But that's like £100, essentially?
No, it was still just £10.
That's what they'd make for a whole year?
They made £20 in a whole year. This was like
17. But they also have a pence. Don't forget about that.
Ah, yeah. Pence.
This was the late 18th century.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So like £10, yeah, £20 is what most, like, an average laborer, like your factory workers or your, you know, horseshoers or whichever, whatever.
But
hey,
man,
that's not a proper thing to name someone who sells shoes to sex workers.
I guess I'll come out.
Oh, man.
Boy, that's a boom right there.
That's
a boom shakalaka.
Boom goes the dynamite from downtown.
But all you have to do is get a body. Of course you become a serial killer. That makes a lot of sense.
And you're totally incentivized to do it. Well, this would have been Dahmer's prime time.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as legalities went, the courts were pretty wishy-washy when it came to the resurrection men. The official word from the courts was that a body was not property. Nobody owned a body. So the theft of a body was not considered a crime. However, the clothes or jewelry buried with the corpse were indeed property. So if a body was taken clothed and bejeweled, then you'd have a criminal case.
Okay.
But since a body was worth more than the clothes or the jewelry, many resurrection men took the corpses nude and threw their clothes back into the now empty grave.
Oh my God, what a waste. That's so funny that was the crime, is taking all the jewels. I'd also be very mad if I just saw a bunch of really useful jewels just being buried with my fucking aunt.
Yeah.
I'd be like, can we just make some replica jewels so she can remember them and then we can have the jewels?
I agree. I don't understand people who bury themselves with all their treasure.
No, I don't get it either.
I'm going to have a fucking joint in my lips. That's different.
That's totally different.
But sometimes medical students didn't wait for the resurrection men to do the dirty work for them. Sometimes the medical students would go out on their own, and Ed Gein himself said that he was inspired by stories of medical students in the 1800s robbing graves. He said that's what gave him the idea.
What the hell did he hear about that in Plainfield, Wisconsin?
Ed Gein was extremely well-read.
Really?
He had
a lot of time on his hands.
He had a lot of time on his hands. Yeah. He'd go to the library. He was really big into stories about, like, cannibals. He read like true crime magazines, and he said that it was the medical students going out that gave him the idea to go out into the graveyards of Plainfield and dig up corpses for his own, because he said, I always wanted to be a doctor.
You could just see like the skull light bulbs flickering above his head.
I can't stand going to 8 years of school because the girls don't like me feeling them for their side.
No, they don't.
But that I love this concept of the people were very... We now consider it to be morbid and insane. But at the time, I guess society itself was probably also against it.
They didn't like it.
But I love the idea that doctors with cold reasoning were like, but science must continue.
Yeah, in one instance, two groups of students hoping to rob the same grave on the same night got into a brawl with pickaxes and crowbars in the middle of the night over who would have the right to take home the fresh corpse that both of them had came for.
So it didn't end like Lady and the Tramp, where they were both sucking on the same intestine and started kissing in the middle. That's too bad.
And on it went for a good 60 years. This eventually became like kind of a part of British Isles culture, where you just kind of knew resurrection men were around the corner.
It's like piracy.
Yeah, and because around, like, you can actually still, the cemetery that I'm going to today, I'm actually going to be on the lookout for those long iron bars around graves, because you can still see those in a lot of British Isles cemeteries.
Cool.
But what finally brought the practice to a permanent end was the actions of William Burke and William Hare.
Live from your grave. Live from your grave.
Now, although they'd both come from Ireland, the two of them met in Edinburgh somewhere in the 1820s. But while Burke had, at the very least, a mind enough to come up with a scam, Hare was an absolute fucking moron.
Hmm.
One witness said he was, quote, the most brutal man ever subjected to my sight, and at first look, seemingly, an idiot.
See, this is a good game that Kissel and I can play all the time when we go out. And like, I'm the little, because I, you know, you always have to pull the Of Mice and Men, like, bit.
You, do we always have to pull that bit?
Always got to do
right?
it. That's our scam. Where you go, hello, Henry. If you do that, I'm gonna be like, these people are too smart to fall for our scam, yeah, big boy. And it's like, as you go around, people start to assume your story, but then they don't know that actually you do have a mind.
This is a very fun game that you play inside of your own mind,
yeah.
Unbeknownst to me.
That's how I see you all the time.
That's
as a big brute with a bowler hat on, with me, like, Fagin-like, with my little short pants on and a little, you know, bushel of coins.
I was walking around the park yesterday trying to talk to the birds, but they didn't talk to me.
I saw you yelling at birds on your Instagram.
And then I was eating some white bread over there, because that's the only kind of bread they have around here. And then I was like, I'm going to bring this out and feed the birds. And the guy was like, no. And he took my plate away, because he said they have to be natural predators.
Mm. He took your plate away?
Yeah, because I was done with the soup.
He took...
Because
this man
told him...
Yeah, I'm not going, I'm going to feed the birds with all this.
Yeah, and then he's like, oh no, you can't do that, because they need to be natural predators.
But then he took the food out of your hands?
Then he brought me my fish and chips.
Oh, okay. So, no, he was the waiter.
Yeah, he was the bartender.
Okay, okay.
No, he wasn't just like the man in the park who takes care of the birds.
No, you can't take care of my tribe.
Yeah, I thought a man just took food out of your hands.
No.
Like, what fucking daredevil would go up to a 6'7" man and just take food out of his hands?
Risky guy.
Well, Burke and Hare did not kill in order to support their family or to merely survive. These men were both degenerate gamblers and drinkers, and their only purpose in life was to feed these two habits. And on November 27th, 1827, they accidentally discovered a scheme that they thought would keep them in poker chips and booze for the rest of their miserable lives.
Podcasts.
Podcasting, yes, indeed.
See, on that night, an elderly lodger at Hare's place, known only as Old Donald, died. This left Hare in a predicament, because Old Donald still owed £4 in rent. So, Hare went to his good friend Burke, always the brains of the operation, and asked him what he should do.
What do we gotta do, Henry? What do we gotta do?
Yeah. I tell you what, Kessel, we profit.
Well, Burke said he'd heard tell of a business opportunity at the local medical school in which crazy Dr. Knox would pay anyone £10 for a body, no questions asked. And sure enough, when they went, Knox gave him £7.10 for Old Donald.
Okay, but he got kind of a discount on him.
Yeah, first time discount.
We're making money on money, man.
Okay.
And Knox made sure to tell him he'd always pay good money for whatever corpses they might happen upon.
Man, it's like a drug dealer.
Yeah.
He gives you that first hit for free.
Yeah.
And so Burke and Hare went and got their wives, told them about the scheme, and everyone went out and got drunk together to celebrate their new careers.
Hurrah!
This is our job now, buddy. This is incredible.
It's a great night, man, to be a fly on the wall there.
Man, that money went away immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately, yeah.
That's how you keep yourself in business. That's what we're learning.
Work work hard. That's what, that's the Norm MacDonald trick.
You keep your back against the wall, yes.
Well, naturally, it wasn't too long before these two men put two and two together and figured out that it was a hell of a lot easier to make corpses than it was to wait until an old man died in their house or to dig up a corpse from a graveyard.
Hey, Henry, you know, I think about how, like, when we're all walking around, it's just like we're corpses, but we're alive.
Ah, you big dummy. You've just hit it. You've just hit our ski, didn't you?
I mean, honestly, that's great. That's better than selling dirt. There's people everywhere.
So Burke and Hare got to the business of murder.
Murder.
In December of 1827, Hare had another sick lodger on his hands named Joseph Miller, and the boys figured they were about to earn another easy payday. But when Miller started showing signs that he was going to recover, Burke and Hare took it upon themselves to make sure he didn't.
No!
So what are you doing? Are you going out for a walk? Yeah, actually, I think my fever broke last night, so I'm actually feeling way better.
God damn it!
What's wrong? Why are you two guys staring at me?
And here, the pair actually showed a little foresight. They knew that they wouldn't be able to sell a body if they showed up with an obvious murder victim, so they came upon a technique that came to be known as burking.
Ooh, that's cool.
Is it like fletching?
Hare would sit on the...
Felching.
Felching, not yes. Fletching, yeah. Ugh.
Hare would sit on the victim's chest while Burke would clamp down on their nose and mouth.
This is our finishing move, Kessel. This is it.
Yeah, and that would suffocate them to death.
That's the best move I've ever heard.
So I just got to sit here?
Yeah. That's all you have to do, my big friend. Oh, and how you'll make that sweet, sweet dollop.
I'll sit on a Yoko's Venus guy's style.
I know you will. Anything to keep him easy and relaxed.
And this way, the person would die without any pesky knife wounds or strangulation marks.
Okay. Hey, got your nose, you little motherfucker.
Brutal uncle's way to kill someone.
Kissel, you enjoying the ride?
Love it.
And when Knox took Joseph Miller off Burke and Hare's hands with a smile, the two men figured they'd come up with the smartest goddamn scheme of the century and got to work dispatching dozens more. Now, Knox himself is an interesting character. People would later discover that his skill as a quote-unquote surgeon was mostly self-taught.
Ah, so another boutique.
Yeah, very good.
Management company.
And although he later called Burke and Hare, quote, Celtic thugs, he never asked questions as long as the bodies they delivered were clean. And they went about this business for months, burking people left and right that no one would miss. Then they'd spend the next week or so getting fucked up and gambling away all their money with their wives until the money ran out. And then they'd go out and do it again.
They had wives?
They had wives, and the wives were in on it.
That's so nice.
Oh, well, that's love.
Yeah,
that's true love.
It's not true love. I think it's true scumbaggery. I think it's just a bunch of scummy
you
fucking
don't think
people.
They loved each other?
Scummy people love each other just as much as classy do.
I'll show you later. I don't think they did.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get to that later on in the story. And we know that they did this at least 16 times because Burke actually kept a ledger of each time they murdered someone, along with how much they got paid for each body.
That's
to kind of give itself an air of business.
Yeah, that's, I mean, honestly, technically, it is a business.
Technically, it's a business, but it's also very hard evidence for murder.
Yeah.
Yes, but unless you wrote, like, Burkham,
they did.
Burkham.
He did.
That's dumb. That is dumb.
Tried yeah. to Burkham, slapped him.
And honestly, you know, it's possible, if not probable, that Burke and Hare were not the first men to have come across this scheme. But they were certainly the last because they were the first to get caught.
Mm.
And as it has been since time immemorial when it comes to serial killers, they only got caught after they murdered someone that people missed. Because until this point, nobody noticed anyone was even missing, much less dead.
Because what are they, basically they're going after, like, travelers, like people that are away from home and derelicts.
Yes, derelicts, tramps. Yeah, people that no one's going to miss.
Sure.
People, like, no one knew that they were there.
The only thing about using them for medical research is that don't you realize that every single cause of death is strangulation? So it's like every single cause of death.
Suffocation.
Is the same thing.
Ah, suffocation.
But that's, I was like, we're getting really good at finding out who got burked.
A lot.
Well, they're not looking at these bodies as from a sort of like autopsy standpoint.
It's like anatomical.
It's totally anatomical. All these guys are doing, because, you know, at that point, like, we like the anatomical knowledge is a relatively new thing in, you know, the oeuvre of America, of world knowledge.
We thought we were run by various humors for a lot of period of time, like these weird kind of like, and also diagrams of us being filled with tiny machines that I used to think about a lot as a little boy. I used to act like a robot at dinner, and I used to eat spaghetti and go chomp, 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 and just pretend like I had a bunch of little machine men in my head and stuff that were like operating levers in order for me to eat.
I just don't know why your parents put you in that special needs class.
They thought I was supposed to be in it because I couldn't tie my shoes until I was 9.
Yeah.
But Burke and Hare finally got on the Bobby's radar.
Uh-oh.
When they murdered a beloved street entertainer named James Wilson, street name Daft Jamie.
Oh, he's having fun.
That's my ancestor.
Yeah.
Just fucking smacking himself in the head with a dead chicken and being like, I fucking love this guy.
This is the best.
He was Steve-O.
Yeah, he was a little slow. He was definitely slow, but people loved him. He was a beloved street entertainer, so when he disappeared one cold Edinburgh Eve, people noticed. And what was more, Burke and Hare actually made more than their regular fee because one of Jamie's feet was interestingly deformed. At least in Dr. Knox's eye. So he gave Burke and Hare an extra £5.
Ah, wonderful. Wow. These dullards' feet are completely crooked. Here's an extra sterling for you, Celtic thugs. That's so much fun. Because, you know, you just walk in there and just be like, you know what? What's our street really missing? I'm so used to hearing that man going 3-4-2 I'm 2-4-3 with the pants on his feet. Yeah, that's the sound I'm missing. He had the half foot. Yeah,
I love that guy. I met some great street performers in Dublin. It was those men sitting on the park bench. I thought they were statues.
Yeah, those guys are great.
They scared me.
Yeah.
Did you meet them or were you just looking at them?
I looked at them and I gave them £10 because that was all I had, or €10, and then they moved their hands for me. That's it. That's all they did.
Just start opening up your fly and start blowing you in the square.
What kind of statue is this?
Well, as soon as Daft Jamie ended up on the table, a few of the students immediately recognized the telltale deformed foot of their favorite street performer. So, like, I think that's Daft Jamie.
I'm pretty certain, because I remember when Daft Jamie did that whole bit where he says, you see how much of my half foot I could put in my mouth? Do you remember that bit? Man, that was a funny bit.
It's too bad, man. He was just spreading joy in a joyless time.
Mm-hmm. But Knox quickly brushed aside the possibility that it was Daft Jamie by making sure to start the dissection with the face before anyone got a good look.
He always has a plan out.
He does.
He always has a plan.
And Burke and Hare might have even gotten away with that murder, but they went one step too far and murdered a beautiful girl named Mary Patterson, who was rumored to be a sex worker, but was in fact just a groovy freewheeling chick. Well, Mary had been lured along with a friend named Janet Brown to a house rented by William Burke's brother, and they were plied with whiskey until Mary passed out. Now, Janet figured there was something a little off about this situation, so she left and told her landlady what was going on. But by the time Janet got back, Mary was dead and hidden under a pile of straw in the back room, and soon she was on her way to Dr. Knox out in Surgeon Square.
Mm.
And Dr. Knox got super weird with this one. Since Mary Patterson was beautiful, Dr. Knox kept the body preserved in a barrel of whiskey for 3 months. Ooh. Just taking it out every once in a while and looking at it and putting it back in.
Well, I mentioned
taking it out, looking at it, putting it back in.
I mentioned I'm not much of a corpse guy, but you guys could do that with me. You can dump me in a vat of whiskey.
I don't think we got one big enough, buddy.
Yeah, buddy, it's a lot of whiskey. Come on.
Oh, I didn't know I was entering roast mode today.
But, you know, I feel like you say weird, but I say the man was just being a real scientist.
What was he trying to figure out?
No, he wasn't being a scientist. He actually brought in a series of local artists to sketch the dead body.
Wow. Scientist.
I don't know what he's trying to figure out.
And then after he finally took the body out of the barrel of whiskey and dissected it, he sold the whiskey to a local pub.
Whoa,
yeah, dead lady juice.
That's a big...
very interesting.
I know that, again, inappropriate. And I imagine if you drink it, you'd probably not feel very good.
I would think you would get sick.
Unless it made you feel really great.
I don't know. I don't think we're ever going to have that chance.
But before word of Mary's disappearance at Burke's brother's house got around to the Bobbies, Burke and Hare would commit one more murder, that of elderly Irish lady Mary Docherty. Now, the partnership between the Burkes and the Hares was already starting to fall apart because the Burkes had started accusing the Hares of selling bodies on the sly without cutting in the Burkes.
Wow, this is unreal.
Honestly, that is because we have a perennial agreement that the three of us will work on things together. And when it's within the Last Podcast Network name, we split it equally. No matter what. And so even if we do get in the grave robbing business and I'm looking at you, Kissel,
we're going to split it up equally.
We have to because we make that promise. Is here on the show right now.
All right.
See? That's real partners. But this is why serial killers have a hard time having partners.
Yeah.
Because they seem to...
I think they're not the most, like, I don't know. Like,
honest?
Yeah.
And they're not forthright?
Not but, like, team players.
You know.
No.
Because the Hillside Stranglers, right? Like, they also had inner tension. Well, the Chicago Riffers also had inner tension. Kind of like a band. I mean, it sounds like...
It's kind of like a band,
Paul
isn't it?
Paul and John fighting with each other. But it just seems like serial killing for the most is a solo expedition up the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And things only got worse when a couple who were lodging next to the old Irish lady started asking why she disappeared so suddenly, and they were not satisfied with the excuse that she had been asked to leave after getting, quote, overly friendly with Burke.
Oh, you know Burke, you can't resist him.
Can't resist him.
Yeah. I can't wait to spend some time with you, lady.
Like him to be like, I love how big and bulbous his knees are.
Not satisfied, the nosy couple next door checked Docherty's room and found Mary Docherty slowly rotting under the bed where she had slept just a couple nights previous.
Okay, now, does the whole town just smell like corpses? Because you would think that they would smell a corpse under the bed, unless the entire town just smells like the gout.
She was in the room next door, and it takes a while for a body to really start reeking through the walls.
I have had a chicken Caesar salad in my hotel room for 3 days. Not this time, but I said, no, don't come in here, and an old chicken Caesar salad. And by 6 hours in, it smelled like a corpse.
Yeah, but you're in the same room. The person in the room next to you can't smell that chicken
I certainly hope not.
But also, the place did smell like shit.
Yeah.
But the time period when we covered Jack the Ripper, remember that people were just dumping their fucking Duke out on the street.
Yeah.
There was a lot of human filth.
Is that what those little crevices were in the streets of Dublin?
Crevices?
You know, did you see the little dip, the little slide? I think that was for the Duke. I think that was a Duke train back in the day.
There's also certain places where carriage grooves, where carriages used to go to, and they would make grooves in the street. It could be that.
Could be that.
It could be dumper gutters. I'm not sure.
It's wild, man. People were crazy.
People crazy.
People are crazy.
Well, after the couple found Mary Docherty's corpse, they went to the police, reported the Burkes, and it all came tumbling down. Now, naturally, the men both blamed each other, but the women flipped immediately and both blamed the men.
Tale as old as time.
That's just smart, though.
Yeah.
In the end, I feel like we all kind of have an agreement, and it's, you know, we know you're going to flip, so you just got to figure out a way to, like, you know, kind of alleviate what was going to happen afterwards.
A little bit.
Well, eventually, Hare, the dumb one, was convinced to turn coat on Burke, and Burke was quickly sentenced to death by hanging for the murders of Mary Docherty, Jamie Wilson, and Mary Patterson.
Damn you, Kazan!
Uh-oh.
And as it was in those days, 25,000 people showed up to watch Burke hang in Edinburgh's Lawn Market. And soon after, a mob gathered and burned down the medical school where Dr. Knox was employed.
That's a day. That is a day.
That's a whole day.
That is like, oh, wow. That's like Coach V. He said, you got to laugh, you got to cry, and you got to think every single day.
What?
Coach Valvano.
Who's Coach Valvano?
He died of cancer. He gave a very motivational speech at the ESPYs.
Henry, you don't need to know.
He laughed. He says laugh, cry, and think.
And think every day.
Well, you have to think. You think, therefore you are.
Coaches are very motivational.
I know, but I don't cry every day.
Coaches also tend to say things that are extremely common sense, that, and then they pass it off as deep wisdom.
It is deep wisdom, common sense.
I don't want to cry every day.
You're crying right now.
That's just my belly. Let's go burn down this goddamn sun.
Yay!
Let's go burn down.
See how fun that is? Now, Hair got off scot-free.
He did.
Scot-free, because he turned coat. And there was not much evidence, because most of the bodies that they had murdered had already gone through the dissection process and were now, I don't know, glue? Something.
Yeah. No idea.
Literally, like pigeon food?
Yeah.
Jeez.
They were fucking gone.
Well, you don't want to feed the pigeons. They need to be natural predators.
I've never even heard that before. They need to be natural predators.
He told me.
We're in a different country. We have to follow their customs.
Follow the rules. With it.
Yeah. But Hare was chased out of Scotland and died as a blind beggar in London many years later, while the women went off to Australia and Ireland, respectively. Knox, though, tried to flip it and reverse it by doing the UK lecture circuit on as an expert on the criminal mind.
That's awesome.
He wants to be Loomis? He wants to be Dr. Loomis from Halloween?
Essentially became Dr. Loomis.
That's awesome.
Oh, my God.
Michael!
Part of me thinks that you're the psychopath, Dr. Loomis. These are the first words I've ever said as Michael Myers.
Well, his specialty was racial theory. Because this was back in a time when they're like, oh, yes, the Irish are a different race from us Anglo-Saxons. Because he said that he had the inside knowledge of the mind of the Celtic thug, whom he claimed could fool even the most intelligent of Saxons.
I don't know if that's true.
I don't know, but I will say that you could find that weird inner white people racism ended up creating a whole series of conflicts in Ireland, which made it sort of like a big ol' fiddle-filled Vietnam.
It's a tense country.
It's a tense country.
You still feel it. You still feel like, yeah, the rising, the troubles. Like, you still feel that to this day. It's pretty intense. It's crazy.
I wouldn't mess with them.
And of course, all of this finally led to sweeping legislation when it came to how medical schools got a hold of bodies. Finally, after 60 years of grave robbing, the Warburton Anatomy Act actually criminalized the practice for the first time and gave medical schools permission to use unclaimed bodies from workhouses and hospitals for dissection instead of buying them from men like Burke and Hare.
This is like when they started making it like illegal for kids to not wear helmets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is the nanny state.
And unfortunately, in Edinburgh, we're not going to be able to see it. Burke's skeleton is on display in Edinburgh in an old museum, but it's closed right now.
No!
Yeah.
All right.
And there's actually a notebook made from Burke's skin.
That's awesome!
That's like on display in this museum. But yeah, my buddy Neil told me it's fucking closed right now, so we can't go.
You really wonder why people get so afraid of white people. And then you come to these countries, and they just did fucked up stuff.
Absolutely.
We walked by the Marcus and I had a little bit of a sightseeing, little walkabout this morning, and we walked to, was the Hatchet Inn?
The Hatchet Inn, yeah.
We walked over there where it's like supposed to have like a section of the door supposed to have human skin like embedded in it, and we looked at it, and it's just paint.
It looks it just looks like paint. But that's the funny thing about these places that, like, I just last night posted on Instagram a video of a dog eating a traffic cone, and then someone commented, like, go to the Hatchet Inn. Got skin on the door.
Fucking changed. Well, it's exactly the same here.
Maybe they should just start feeding their animals.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what needs to happen.
That dog fucked up that cone for like 20 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
I walked past
a fun chew toy for a dog.
I walked past the same dog, and it was owned by a homeless woman. And the homeless woman was doing this thing. She was sort of, there was a elderly tourist couple sitting on a bench while that dog was going, and this weird homeless woman was dancing in front of them, and they were both sitting and they were looking as if they thought that this was a show. They had smiles on their faces. Yeah. And eventually, but the woman went and she grabbed the cone and slapped the dog with it. And the dog went, argh! And the dog started biting on the cone and they're pulling back and forth. She let the dog have it, but then she did this weird whirling dervish like dance in front of the couple, and they're like,
see, that's the great great granddaughter of Daffy Stew or whatever the hell the name of that guy was. There at Clubfoot John. What was his name again?
Daft Jamie.
Well, that is a wonderful story, Marcus.
Technically,
thank you for sharing.
Do you think Daft Jamie might be like the great great grandfather of Jamie Kennedy.
Could be.
Honestly, could be. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. That we have more to come. We have our journeys continue.
They do. We realize this.
We're going to be here a long time.
Yeah, buddy. We got really hammered at the very last night in Dublin. Remember, because we were staying at that wonderful Fitzwilliam Hotel.
Oh, great hotel. And the here has been wonderful as well.
Mm-hmm.
We should praise hotels as opposed to just diss on the Hyatt place in St. Paul,
Minnesota. Oh, go fuck yourself. But we went there, and it legitimately, I thought it was Kissel lore, right? Because you were like, it's got a 24/7 bar. And I was like, I don't believe
the
you.
Hotel.
Yes, yeah. Because at first I just thought they were just feeding you booze to keep you from destroying the lobby.
Yeah.
But then we sat at this bar at the hotel, and for people that are staying there, it's 24/7, where there's no bartender. It's just like The Shining, where
really
you're just
is.
Sitting
really
in a bar alone. There's nobody in there.
Silent.
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 We're sitting there, and then but all you do is like, I need a drink. And you yell, and the person from reception, like, kind of runs over, pours you drinks, and then goes back.
And the reason that they allow it is because he says a lot of Americans stay here. Mm-hmm. If it was Irish people, they said that they would not allow it because they don't know how to stop drinking. And then he said, but the Americans, they're very conservative. They only have one or two. And they're sitting there like,
what? I've never heard that.
I was very happy for us, though. Like, we did not. I was happy that Americans represented our country so well. I mean,
yeah.
It's a violent lie.
No, it's not.
Alcohol,
no, we know. We actually know how to. We do know how to drink. That is one thing that I've noticed here is that they like to drink until they are monsters.
What?
No, that was funny when he said the Irish would ruin. He's just like, because I don't know how to tell you this, but sometimes the Irish, they drink just a drink.
No way.
What? That's crazy.
I certainly don't ever do
that's
that.
That's insane. Those aren't our lineage people. By any chance,
no.
Are they? So yes, we will be out on the road. Can't wait to see everyone. We got Berlin. We're close. We're nipping it up with Berlin. But before that, we got Stockholm. We got London. We got Manchester, Edinburgh,
Birmingham.
It's gonna be a blast.
I want to go to that Black Sabbath museum they have in Birmingham.
Oh yeah, that'll be awesome.
Yeah, dude,
we have to.
It's the birthplace of heavy metal.
All right. Is there anything else, guys?
I think that's all we got.
I think that's it.
That's it, man. We got Mormonism part 19 coming next week. We are really like about really rounding the corner on here. We have learned quite a bit. We're going to address a lot of the stuff that people have sent to us. I'm very, very excited to continue on this tour. I am, oh man, I am just deep in it. I watched a full Mormon ritual last night.
Ooh,
I watched someone brought in a hidden cam into one of the temples, and I watched all hour and 20 minutes of it.
Damn.
And it is interesting.
All right. And if you want to send us your stories on your experience with Mormonism, perhaps you're a Mormon or an ex-Mormon, sidestoriesLPOTL@gmail.com.
Also, talk to us about goddamn bear sausage. I want to find out if people have had this thing and how often people are eating it. And I guarantee if I get at least, because I imagine
you're
people
gonna,
are
going to
say.
We're going to get five people being like, I've had it before. But that means that like, how many listeners do we get? About 2 to 3 million an episode now. We're going to get like 0.000, like 1%.
That's who I'm looking for. The exceptional boys.
Bears are omnivores, so their meat tends to taste like their last meal.
Cool.
So if a bear ate a bunch of shit.
Or what if, but honestly now, what if the bear ate one of your pickled ginger ales or whatever that
then
is?
You'd
then
you'd
then we're talking about a horse of a different color.
That's a bear of a different pant size.
Ooh, tastes like pickled onions. I love it.
Honestly, yeah, because bears eat honey sometimes.
Oh, they're cute. Yeah,
there's
don't
a
rip
whole,
your face off.
There's
they
a whole
cute.
Article on here's why people don't eat bear meat.
Well, we'll find out. That's just in the part of the anti-bear meat campaign because they're worried it's going to fuck with the anti puffin meat campaign.
Oh,
and it's actually it's kind of what you were saying before we started recording, that they're invasive species because they're called invasivores, which
yeah.
are people that specifically eat invasive species, but they don't eat bears because bears taste like shit.
We'll find out.
I
you just read that, though, so you didn't read that before we had our conversation.
It's not, yep. But I am saying my instincts were correct.
Yes, but you just had instincts before.
And
now you have
and
knowledge.
And bears are not carnivores. They're omnivores. They're like us.
Oh, very nice.
I mean, I'm still going to probably eat it.
All right, everyone. Well, we will let you know about our food experiences as we continue to travel. And hopefully you don't shame us too much because, you know, we love you and we love people.
Well, I just like experiences.
I know you do.
I just like experiences. I'm a curious boy. I'm being curious.
All right, everyone. We will see you at the live shows. Never forget, hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gene.
Magustilations.
Hail me. Hail.
Let's go burn down medical school.
Yay! Let's get Oxford!
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.